couch of potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new film Skyscraper, Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation, Leave No Trace, AI Tales, and a look back at Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. I'm also going to be talking about the news, Trailer Park, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring A Quiet Place. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The first piece of news, and this actually is, I mean, I guess it's entertainment. I don't usually talk about this or how it dovetails into presidential politics, but I had to talk about this because it happened not just in my hometown, but in, like, my neighborhood. Stormy Daniels was arrested at a strip club in Columbus, Ohio, which is where I live, and it was on Wednesday, but I was out of town. Of all days to be out of town, I was out of town with the family at an amusement park while Stormy Daniels was at an amusement park of her own at a strip club in Columbus, and she was arrested for violating a 10-year-old law that went on the books by some hypocritical lawmakers, actually, in Ohio, that said no touching in a strip club. And I think there's actually a provision in the law that says no touching of non-family members, which, of course, turns my head, and I'm like, what family members are going to be touched in a strip club by a dancer on stage? But it was a sting in which she was in town at the Sirens nightclub, and apparently she put her, am I allowed to say what, I will say it backwards, her sboob in the face of some undercover officers. Now, first of all, how do you get that gig? Who's the one who says, you know, we need you to go hang out in strip clubs and make sure that there's no touching by the dancers on stage? And the guy's like, gosh darn it, can't I go do the dangerous drug sting down at the other side of town? Can't I go, stop the bank robbers? No. If you really need me to, I will go to the strip club and see if a dancer puts her saboob in my face. Anyways, she ended up being released without incident because, of course, her lawyer went ballistic all over Twitter and everything, saying it was a setup. And, you know, of course, because she's obviously in the public spotlight. That's why she was at this. That's why a 39-year-old feature dancer is at a strip club in Columbus, Ohio. If she is 39, she might be older than that. I don't know. But then she was released. And the reason I had heard she was released was because that law only pertains to regular dancers who work there. Like, the apparently, if you're out of town guest, you just don't know the law and you kind of get a pass on that. Anyways, then she went to this other strip club in town, which is near where I live. I mean, it's literally across the street from a grocery store that I go to all the time. And I had taken a nap that night. So I, like, missed both chances to go see Stormy Daniels do whatever she was going to do. But then again, do you really want to mix it up with a stripper who had sex with Donald Trump? Yuck. Anyways, the other thing I want to talk about, which really isn't news, it's more or less a rant. I found the new worst thing in the world in theaters, and that is smartwatches. And everyone complains about smartphones and people. And actually, I just read something from a friend on Facebook who said he went to go see Ant-Man this week, and this woman had her daughter sitting on her lap and was playing the movie Moana on her phone at full volume while the movie is going on so she could watch the movie. I mean, people are taking this crazy. And there's this misconception that things are worse now than they've ever been, that people are more rude ever. Well, the people were rude in the 70s. I remember going and seeing movies and you had people kicking your seats and they were talking and they were throwing popcorn and they were laughing and they'd, get up and move around. I mean, there were people rude. It's just you have more devices to be rude nowadays. And the latest one is the smartwatch. You know, Apple Watches and Fitbits. Part of it is because they glow like the miniature sun, and they're set for outdoor use, so they're very, very bright. Well, you get into a theater where it's dark, and the person in front of me when I was seeing Skyscraper this week, she had an Apple Watch on or a Fitbit or something, and it was on full brightness, and every time she moved, because these are motion sensitive, and it would just burst up, and she put her hand behind her head, and it would just right in my face. And how do you not realize that that's happening? First of all, is my question there. But also, how are you so stupid that you don't realize you're going to a theater? Turn the brightness down. But people do it with their phone. They have their phones on full brightness in a theater. So it's bright enough to read in bright sunlight, but you're in a theater. It's a miniature sun. Learn to use the dim feature, people. I don't care if you have a smartwatch, but turn it down. Put it on theater mode. And the other thing is, the reason people are really noticing it now is because, like I said, while people are still rude and people were rude in the 70s, there was no recourse. You wanted to see Star Wars in 1977 or 1978, you had to go to the theater. You want to see Star Wars today, wait 3 months, it's going to be on video, and you can watch it on a big screen TV with a surround sound and a comfortable couch with a beverage of your choice and whatever you want to eat at home in the quiet and privacy of your own home. And it's actually more comfortable, and many times, unless you just want the screen to fill the wall, it's a better experience than theaters. That's why theaters are dying, and it's because there are so many options for people to be rude in theaters, and then there are so many options for people to not go to them. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to hit really quickly is Goosebumps 2, Haunted Halloween, which opens on October 12th.
Haunted Halloween.
Did you miss me?
You discovered a walking, talking dummy and you didn't tell me?
Okay, well, he seemed like a really nice guy at the start.
They're moving.
So tiny and cute, what can they possibly do? Sonny, they're just gummy bears.
This is a pretty pared-down trailer. You get an idea that essentially these two kids stumble upon this book that's the last R.L. Stein book, and it explodes and everything comes to life again, which is very much what happened in the first Goosebumps. I actually liked the first Goosebumps movie. I thought it was clever and fun, kept with the spirit of the books, and I always like a good horror element film. And even though it was a whimsical kids movie, it still had those horror movie elements. This one looks like it could be fun. Looks like it's about the same, except without Jack Black. And, you know, that's not necessarily a bad thing. The next one I want to hit really quickly is Mary, Queen of Scots, which opens on December 7th.
Now, we present the first episode of a new radio drama series, The Death of Mary, Queen of Scots.
You are Mary, Queen of Scots?
I am.
Oh!
Oh my gosh, that wasn't the trailer. Sorry. That was an old BBC presentation. That was a Monty Python sketch, for those who didn't recognize it. One of my favorite Monty Python sketch, The Death of Mary, Queen of Scots. This is the real trailer for Mary, Queen of Scots, starring Saoirse Ronan and Margot Robbie.
Mary is our foe. We must never bow to her as we bow before you.
You have the boldness to doubt my judgment.
She is only your queen if I should not produce an heir.
What is it like to have a man?
With heaven's blessing, we bring an heir to Scotland and to England.
It is a clear provocation.
We must make war in Scotland.
So put your skills to use.
My father's a big history buff, and he's been asking me, God, for months about this movie. When is it coming out? What's going to happen? And I'm like, Dad, it comes out. It's award season for next year. Just, you've got to wait. And I thought that Margot Robbie was going to play like the older version of Mary Queen of Scots, even though she doesn't become that old. Saoirse Ronan plays Mary Queen of Scots, and Margot Robbie plays Queen Elizabeth, and she's very dulled down. She looks like the Virgin Queen, you know, that kabuki mask of powder and makeup that Queen Elizabeth had, especially in her older days. And older, I mean, put it in quotes, because, you know, they didn't live all that long back then. But this looks like it's actually a really interesting film. I mean, there's this ancient feud rivalry between these two women. And if you know your history, you know how it ends. Or you can listen to the Monty Python sketch and find out. But this looks like it's going to be a good movie. And there's going to be certainly a big awards push for both Ronan and Robbie. So that one, actually, I'm kind of looking forward to. The trailer really turned me on to it. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Leave No Trace and AI Tales.
Hey,
back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews and start off with Leave No Trace. A veteran with PTSD lives in the woods with his daughter until the authorities try to reintegrate them into society.
Who taught you how to read?
My dad teaches me.
You're actually quite a bit ahead of where you need to be. Do you feel safe living with your dad?
We didn't need to be rescued.
Your dad needs to provide you shelter and a place to live.
He did.
It's not a crime to be unhoused, but it's illegal to live on public land.
We have found an option.
Are we gonna be okay here?
You can still think our own thoughts.
This is directed by Deborah Granick, who did Winter's Bone, 10 years ago? And it was this heavy, dramatic film that took place on an Indian reservation. And not a whole lot of people remember much about Deborah Granick because she did this movie and she got a nomination for an Academy. I think it was nominated for Best Director and Best Picture. And then, of course, starred a then somewhat unknown actress named Jennifer Lawrence. And Lawrence got an Academy Award nomination for the film as well. Before that, Jennifer Lawrence did a movie called Poker House before it, which was kind of had very similar themes, but it really put Jennifer Lawrence on the map. And then, of course, it got her sort of that respect as an actor, but it was Hunger Games that then kind of put her on the popular map. So she was one of those actors and those careers that happened to have that 1-2 punch of artistic merit and popularity both at the same time or very close to each other. But Winter's Bone, I don't think it was a debut feature, but it came on really strong for her in award season, and then she kind of disappeared for a while. I think she did a documentary, and now she's directing this movie, which a lot of people are attaching to it because the girl who plays the daughter in the movie, she's getting a lot of buzz, and a lot of people are, well, not a lot of people, but people are comparing it to Jennifer Lawrence because Winter's Bone kind of really launched Jennifer Lawrence's career initially, whereas Thomasin McKenzie, who plays the daughter in this movie, she's pretty much a relative unknown, and this is going to be hopefully a big boon for her because as much as it is Ben Foster's movie who plays her father, it is very much her movie because she's the one who changes the most. I mean, we all know that teenage girls, or teenagers in general, but in this one because it's a teenage girl, you're going through changes. You want to experience the world, whereas in the movie, the guy has retreated from society. For whatever reason, he doesn't want to be part of this, and that's part of his PTSD, and that's how he deals with it. And they live in a state park, and he has his daughter with him, and they've been living for a while. But, of course, she's a teenager, and when she gets her first taste of real life, which he's retreated from, she's curious and interested, and she kind of wants to stay there. And that's where the real conflict is, this very tight-knit two-person group. But, of course, she wants to experience new things, which is what teenagers do. And there's a lot of reality there and a lot of truth to that. And very good performances by both Ben Foster and McKenzie. It's very understated, though. And if you've seen Winter's Bone, if you remember that movie, that likewise was very understated. It was not a big acting moment for Jennifer Lawrence, but the drama was found in sort of pulling back the acting, which is an interesting technique. And that's just Granick's style. Overall, Leave No Trace, it's a well-made movie. It can be frustrating at times, especially for me, because I wanted to know more about his specific condition, what it was that made him leave, what happened to his wife and or the mother of his daughter, and what it was like for them beforehand and how things have changed over the years. But that's not what the movie's about. That's not what the movie addresses. The movie addresses sort of this here and now. You're kind of hitting the ground running without the history of the people, and you're more or less watching them react to society, especially when it's their first introduction to it, especially with the girl. It reminds me a little bit of some other movies that I've seen. Like, if you remember the movie Captain Fantastic with Viggo Mortensen a couple years ago, it reminds me of that quite a bit, because Captain Fantastic was about a father who took his kids and retreated, and they give more history and context to that movie. And it was a little bigger. I mean, he had brilliant kids and he was teaching them everything. And it was a little bit over the top on how much they knew and how good they were at doing it and how obedient they were as kids, because he had a whole clan out there. But it does remind me a bit of Captain Fantastic, even if it doesn't have the scope. And this is a little more realistic. You could believe this thing happens. It's an interesting look at parenting and the struggles and the extreme things that we all do to keep our kids safe. So I'm going to have to say that Leave No Trace kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is AI Tales. It's a smaller film. This anthology of short science fiction stories deal with the various elements of technology that impact people's lives in the future.
Today's actually an auspicious occasion. 1,000 miles. Halfway point.
Voila. What are we celebrating? What, that we're stranded in the middle of nowhere with all our food buried under 50 feet of sand?
Welcome to the Phoenix Personal Rescue System.
I am a big fan of anthology movies, mainly because it's like reading short stories or watching a short film block at a film festival. Generally, you read one or you get through one, and if you don't like it, then another one's going to start pretty soon. Whereas if you sit in a 2.5 hour movie and you don't like the movie, you got to deal with it for 2.5 hours. This is actually a relatively short movie. It runs just a bit over an hour, and it's available on demand right now. I'm a sucker for anthology movie and science fiction films, so I will take a look at almost anything that I can. This has some interesting ideas. I believe it's four stories. And the trailer we played was just one of the stories. Weirdly enough, I could not find an actual full trailer of the entire film. I just could find the trailers of the individual short films. And they have interesting ideas, and there's a couple recognizable people in it. Pom Clementeef, who plays Mantis in the Guardians of the Galaxy films, she is in it, and Eric Roberts is in it. So they got a couple. I mean, Eric Roberts is, I think, in something like 39 movies that are coming out this year. So, you know, it's not hard to get him in your film. But there are a couple of recognizable faces in the film, which is nice. I mean, you need that, but there's some neat effects, and this shows what can be done with a small budget. This shows that you can do science fiction on a small budget too, because there's stuff that happens in this movie that uses special effects and CGI that I know, just as somebody who has some roots in the independent film genre and production, I know that can be done nowadays and affected with minimal budget. You don't have to throw $100 million into the movie. So it's kind of neat what can be done on a shoestring. And there's a couple ones, like one of the first stories, which has Clementeef in it, it deals mostly with the dialogue between two people, and then the special effects come right at the end. And I appreciate that. I appreciate the ability to front load it with characters and dialogue, but I never thought that the stories really congealed. They were more or less presented as an idea, and sometimes were somewhat unclear as to what's happening, and some of them just weren't terribly well written. It's a neat movie, and it's worth checking out if you want to see what can be done on a small budget, and that can inspire you as a filmmaker. But the movie itself is a little bit underwhelming, we'll say. And so I'm going to have to say that AI Tales kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That is it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Skyscraper and Hotel Transylvania 3 Summer Vacation. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and hit the big summer movies. The first one being Skyscraper. Dwayne Johnson stars as a security expert who must save his family from a terrorist attack in a high-tech high-rise.
Is your family enjoying their stay?
Very much so. They're shocked you gave us the entire floor.
After your security assessment, what do you think of the building?
The Pearl is the tallest, most advanced building in the world. You've built a vertical city. But you've brought with it every single safety and security challenge that I could think of. Not only have you brought them all indoors, but you've trapped them 240 floors in the air. No one really knows what would happen if things go wrong.
Daddy! Tell me, how much do you love your family?
Back in the 80s, the movie Die Hard came out, and it was kind of groundbreaking, not only because it's a great movie, it's a really good, solid action movie, but it sort of started its own genre of action movies in itself, of sort of that lone wolf in the mix trying to stop terrorists. And not that they didn't have those type of movies before 1988, but they weren't at the level of sort of refinement that Die Hard sort of perfected. And then there were just tons of movies like that. There were, you know, Die Hard on a plane, like with Executive Decision, and Die Hard on a train with Under Siege, and a Die Hard on a submarine with Under Siege, and you had Die Hard in the White House later on with like White House Down and Olympus Has Fallen, and they had Die Hard in a hockey arena with Jean-Claude Van Damme once. I think it was called Sudden Death. And now they've kind of come full circle, and now we have Die Hard back in a building. And of course you got fire involved in this one as well, because so this is essentially if Die Hard and the Towering Inferno got busy and then had a baby, this is what you'd end up with. And it's essentially just a big summer action movie. I mean, it's absurd physics. It ignores, it, at times, not just ignores physics, but it mocks physics. It flies in the face of physics. It's like, oh, physics says you can't do this? Well, my Hollywood special effects robot says we can. And that's okay, because that's what big summer movies are. And Dwayne Johnson has kind of become the stock action star, and he's done these big, broad movies. Even something like Rampage, which was earlier this year. But in Rampage, yeah, it involved a giant gorilla and a giant alligator and a giant wolf, but it was essentially the stock action movie. And San Andreas was the same thing. It was, again, he was going, really, I mean, talk about going against nature. And that was like Earthquake. It's sort of this merging of the disaster films and the action films together. I mean, you know, it's really, does Dwayne Johnson, can he stop an earthquake? No, but he can fight against it to save his family. And it's the same thing here. He's trying to save his family in this high rise. And it works mainly because of Dwayne Johnson. I mean, he really anchors the movie. We haven't had a charismatic leading man sort of action movie star since Will Smith. I mean, Will Smith, I think, was the last one, and he kind of stopped making like well-known movies maybe about 10 years ago. He sort of trickles in with, you know, that movie on Netflix, and he was in Suicide Squad. But in terms of being that box office draw, I mean, 2008 was when he was sort of at that last peak before he kind of slid down the mountain with Jaden Smith and M. Night Shyamalan. But this movie is exactly what you'd expect it to be. There's action. There's the sort of like the little family interaction. His Nev Campbell plays his wife. I think it's kind of cool her character's in there, because her character, they managed to not make her the damsel in distress, because that is kind of an old concept. But she also does need saving occasionally, because she's running around with two kids and she's stuck. So, I mean, she's got military training. He's got military training. So she does get a chance to kick some butt as well and be more than just the doting wife. Nev Campbell, it could have been anyone playing that role. I read a headline this week. It wasn't interesting enough for me to actually read the story, but I read a headline this week where it talked about how Nev Campbell felt that she was rejected by Hollywood because she was just trying to be pigeonholed as a horror actress after Scream. And I'm like, well, a lot of people make big, good careers out of that. But also, you're not that great of an actor, Nev Campbell. You were a stock pretty girl from the 90s in that Kevin Williamson, Dawson's Creek, was, she was on like Party of Five or whatever, but that sort of mid 90s trash television soap opera drama. And you really never broke out of that. And I never believed her as anything but that character. But this movie's fun. And then also, not to be dismissed, he plays a guy who's lost part of his leg. And I think that's kind of cool to have it's sort of that larger than life superhero who is disabled. And that's good. I mean, I think that it's worked into the movie without being obtrusive, without saying, look, people, I've lost a leg and they have to preach about it. That's just kind of part of his character. That's something that goes with him. He lost it, and they show him how he loses it in the first part of the movie. And you understand that this is sort of how he is. Instead of having PTSD or something like that, he's lost a leg. And they deal with it really well, in the sense that they just ease it into the story and it doesn't hit you over the head. And it kind of feels very organic to the character. And, you know, bravo for the people making that as well. So ultimately, Skyscrapers, it's a big, dumb, stupid movie, but it's a lot of fun. And it pushes the buttons. But, you know, sometimes you want your buttons to be pushed while you got a big tub of popcorn and a giant silo of soda while you watch a movie. So I'm going to have to say Skyscraper kind of rocked.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Hotel Transylvania 3, Summer Vacation. Dracula and the gang take a summer cruise to get away from the hotel for a while Dracula tries to fall in love.
Dad?
No, babies!
You're stressed out from working too hard. You need a vacation from running everyone else's vacation. And I know just how to fix it.
Mavis,
where are we going? A cruise?
Ooh. Surprise!
Oh, no, 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 no,
Dad.
No,
Dad! No. Come on, there's so much to do.
Maybe you'll find your own fireworks on the cruise.
It's not the Love Boat, Frank.
There have been two Hotel Transylvania movies already, and if you have not seen them, you're probably not going to be all that interested in seeing the third one. If you've seen the first two, you know exactly what you're going to get. It's an animated film. It stars Adam Sandler as Dracula, and you got all of the voices of his friends like David Spade and Kevin James and Steve Buscemi. It's directed by Genndy Tartakovsky, who did like Dexter's Laboratory, and so you get that really frenetic, jumping around, almost kung fu style of animation that you'd see in the old Cartoon Network series. I grew up with Monster Cereal and Mad Monster Party and watching Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman and these movies where they did this monster mashup. And sometimes it was, you know, it was meant to be a serious horror movie, which I guess Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman was back in the 40s, but could also be somewhat whimsical. There was a cartoon on Saturday mornings called Drac Pack, and there was this cartoon called Fang Face, and the monster cereals always made it kind of like there were friends and buddies, and it was kind of this, there's a cute element to it, and it could be somewhat of a marginal horror movie like Monster Squad, or it could have been sort of a send-up and a tribute to the monster movies as well, and I like that. This speaks to me to a certain level. Now, is it Adam Sandler? Is it goofy? Does it have fart humor? Yeah, it's got all that stuff, but it's a kid's movie ultimately, too. I'm all for horror movie elements made cute. I think that's kind of fun. And it's a good sport in terms of bringing in all these different characters and what they do. Now, in terms of the story, I will say, for it being the third movie in this franchise, the story holds up pretty well. Because a lot of times you get these movies that get to the third in the series and you're just like, oh God, are we still on this? Have they not wrapped this up yet? Oh heavens. You know, and it becomes punishing getting through all of those. This one isn't that way. This one, it's very much in line with the other ones. I don't think it's as good as the other ones. They are stretching, sending them on a cruise. They go on a monster cruise. I've been on plenty of cruises, so that's kind of fun in itself. But they are sort of stretching the plot a bit in terms of trying to figure out what is in store for these monsters later. I'm sure if this makes enough money, they'll figure something out for part four. But overall, it's cute. It's something that kids are going to like. It's not as highbrow or as accessible to grownups as like a Pixar movie is, which tends to always bridge that gap. But it's a great way to start heading down that road to Halloween. So I'm going to have to say that Hotel Transylvania 3 Summer Vacation kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to do a retro review of Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, The Box Office, and the Home Cinema Roundup featuring A Quiet Place. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the movie reviews with a retro review. Because I was talking about Goosebumps 2 in the first segment, which is, of course, leading us into Halloween with Haunted Halloween, and I was talking about Hotel Transylvania 3, which is a mad monster mash movie, why not continue the early Halloween celebrations with a look back at Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein? Bud Abbott and Lou Costello star as two hapless everyday workers caught up in a plot with Dracula, the Wolfman, and Frankenstein's monster.
Count Dracula sleeps in this coffin but rises every night at sunset. Chick is right. This is awful silly stuff.
The nation's top comics, Abbott and Costello. Petrified, but hilariously. In the spookiest laugh fest on record.
I am a huge fan of the Universal Monster movies. I've always enjoyed them, all the way from Dracula, which was the first one, and into House of Dracula. I mean, the Creature from the Black Lagoon's fine, but I kind of count that as being outside of the fray because the Black Lagoon didn't happen until the 50s, and then they did the sequels then. So it was not in that run. They originally started in the 1930s, early 1930s, like 1931, and they went through the 30s with Frankenstein movies and mummy movies, and when they finally got to the Wolfman in 1940, after that they rolled into Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman and House of Frankenstein and House of Dracula, where they started putting the monsters together, and I love that stuff. I've always loved that stuff. I think it's just neat to have a mix of monsters in the film. And yeah, they were very serious when they started. Dracula was actually a deadly serious movie, as was Frankenstein. And they eventually kind of turned a little whimsical and silly by the time they got to the mashup movies, like Wolfman, Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman, that sort of thing. But they're still a lot of fun. I love the originals. I love the silly ones. I love that run for about 15, 20 years. You had a great run with Universal. And to cap it off, you had Abbott and Costello come in and do the Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. And yes, this is a comedy. It's absolutely an Abbott and Costello movie. And the first half of it is mostly Abbott and Costello. And it's them doing their Abbott and Costello routine, which if you're familiar with their shtick, that's what it was. Now, they did two other movies. They did, I believe, Abbott and Costello Meet the Mummy and Abbott and Costello Meet the Invisible Man. Those were never that good. Those were much more Abbott and Costello movies that never quite worked as a monster movie. What's kind of unique about this one is this works as an Abbott and Costello comedy, but it also works as a bona fide Universal monster movie. I mean, yeah, it's a little bit silly with Dracula and Frankenstein and the Wolfman kind of getting together, but they bring in Lon Chaney Jr. as the Wolfman, carrying on the character that he played in the other movies. You got Bela Lugosi. Only the second and only other time he ever played Dracula. A lot of people think he's done it. They did. It was in Return of the Vampire, but that was through Columbia, so they couldn't use the Dracula name. And he did like Mark of the Vampire. So he played vampires since, but he played Dracula in 1931. And then he did Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein. He actually casts a reflection in a mirror, not just in the movie, but you actually see that shot in the trailer when they introduce him as Bela Lugosi. There's a certain amount of credibility to this because you had Lon Chaney Jr. and you had Bela Lugosi. Yeah, you didn't have Boris Karloff, but you had Glenn Strange playing the monster, and he had played the monster in the other Monster Mash movies. This, like I said, this is fun. It's silly. It's goofy. Abbott and Costello do their thing, but you also get them in a monster movie setting. I showed it to my kids. It's the first, I think it was the second time my second son had seen it. My youngest son, it was the first time he'd seen it. And they enjoyed it. I mean, it's breezy, it's quick, and it's still appealing. Here, like what, 70 years after it was made, it's still an appealing movie. This is back when you couldn't just rely on special effects, and you couldn't just rely on spectacle. You had to get strong actors, and they had great actors. They had two comedic actors who were great, and you had three legendary monster actors. And one thing that's interesting about Frankenstein, I brought this up to my son. I said, you know, people always get in a big case and they go, oh, well, you know, Frankenstein, you call the monster Frankenstein. And then there's always that person who's like, that monster's not Frankenstein. That monster is Frankenstein's creation. It's the creature. It's the monster. It's Frankenstein's monster. It's not Frankenstein. Well, I guess since he created it, it's technically his son. And his name's Victor Frankenstein. His son would take his name. So the monster is named Frankenstein. Let's settle that discussion right now. If the monster got a driver's license, his name would be Frankenstein. I don't know what his first name would be. Chad Frankenstein or something? I don't know. But I wanted to settle that argument. Anyways, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's look really quickly at the box office. Last week, it was a good weekend for Ant-Man and the Wasp. It did quite well. It did better than its first movie, made $75 million, almost $76 million over the course of the weekend. And that bested Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom almost by a factor of three. Although Jurassic World Fallen Kingdom is doing well. I mean, it's not as nearly as close to its domestic total as what it did with the first Jurassic World movie, but the international is making up for all of that because in international, they like goofy stuff. The first Purge made $17 million, which the reason that's good is because these are cheap movies to make. This is lower than the other Purge movies. It's on a downswing. This movie only costs $13 million to make, so by the time I'll be done with the show, it's going to be profitable because it's made up any sort of deficit in advertising and sending out the prints. And then Whitney came outside of the top 10 with 12 and only $1.2 million, which is kind of low for such what should have been a high-profile documentary. This weekend, of course, look for Ant-Man to do fine in the box office, but it's still not going to be one of the highest-grossing Marvel movies, and I don't think anyone ever expected it to. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week's spotlight is on A Quiet Place. After an attack by creatures that hunt by sound, a family tries to stay alive by silently living in a secluded cabin. This was one of those shockers of box office performances. It's sort of like Get Out from last year. It was the little movie that could. Part of it was a dinky little movie. It did not have a big budget. It did not have big stars. I mean, yeah, Emily Blunt was in it, but that's because she's married to the director. I mean, the reason John Krasinski was able to land Emily Blunt in this movie was because he was able to land Emily Blunt in real life. If this were just Fred Jones making a movie or... She's a bigger star than this movie was. I mean, much bigger than John Krasinski. There's a reason why John Krasinski was the lead in the movie, because he was making it as small and as intimate as possible. And of course, it starred him and his wife. And he originally wasn't going to have her, but that still doesn't change the fact that he was able to put Emily Blunt in there. And she's on more posters than he is. She's a recognizable face. She's a name actor. John Krasinski is now, but he's never quite kind of hit that level of stardom that she has. But as a director, he might have a lot of promise. This is a good movie. It's a movie that's almost better to watch at home, kind of like The Witch, if you remember that film, which I loved. That was a movie that would be frustrating to watch with a large audience that didn't respect it, because people would get bored with it or people wouldn't understand the silence. And A Quiet Place is going to be quiet. So you can have it, as we talked about in the first segment, you can have it as loud or as quiet as you want. You can have it as dim or as bright as you want in your own room with your TV in control. And that's the way you want to watch A Quiet Place. I was fortunate enough to see it. I saw it in a big audience, but when I saw it in the theater, everyone was quiet. And that helped the movie. But gosh, if you had a talker or a baby or anything like that, it would have been hugely distracting for this film. A Quiet Place is a well-done horror thriller, very worth its excitement and box office, and it was a juggernaut. If they had spent like $150 million on it, it wouldn't have been a huge hit. But with even just a respectably small budget, even if it was just $20 or $30 million, it did enormously well. So if you haven't seen A Quiet Place, now's the time to do it on video with your own control of your own environment. I say A Quiet Place rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent!
Other new releases this week are Cop and a Half, New Recruit, starring Lou Diamond Phillips, poor guy, and Chappaquiddick. And that is it. Next week, I'm going to be talking about The Equalizer 2, Mamma Mia, Here We Go Again, and Unfriended, The Dark Web. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.